Someone coming in this evening asked me if we were going to do another big word tonight. No, we had one big word this week, and I'm only good for one big word a week. Last night was propitiation. And I think that those of us who are here will probably remember that word a little bit better. I know I will from my study on it. I'm going to take some thoughts both from, primarily, I guess, from the latter part of the book of Genesis. But before I go there, I want to read a few verses from James chapter 4. James chapter 4. You know, Sunday night I talked about how songs have special meanings to us, and they sometimes make us think of a person. Well, this passage has special meaning to me because the 14th verse was the verse that my very first, and I hesitate to call it sermon, was based upon on a Sunday night in Martinsville, Indiana, about our life is but a vapor. That particular talk, when I practiced it at home, lasted 10 minutes and 32 seconds. When I gave it on Sunday night, it lasted 5 minutes and 41 seconds. And I don't think I left anything out. I suspect that for the audience, it was kind of like trying to drink out of a fire hydrant. I was going a little fast. I'm going to begin reading with verse 13 and read the last part of that chapter, James chapter 4. Go now, you that say, go today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even as a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For we ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now you rejoice in your boastings, all such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Particularly in verses 13 and 14, give us a real indication of somewhat the folly of overly planning our lives. I'm not sure that I think overly planning our lives is inappropriate. This is not a passage that is against wise planning. It is, however, a passage that is against mistaken presumptions. And some of those mistaken presumptions is we know exactly what's going to happen. It's been said, if you really want to make God laugh, tell him what your rest of your life's going to be like, because he knows that probably it won't unfold exactly like you think it's going to unfold. I find that even my next day doesn't unfold usually exactly like I think it. So I want to talk about the concept of detours tonight. A detour is a distraction from your originally intended route or path of conduct. We get in our cars and we have a destination in mind. And we typically know how we plan to get there. We know what roads and what streets. If we're familiar with it, if we're not, we've probably looked at a map or GPS'd it and have a pretty good idea how we're going to get there. But sometimes we run into a detour. We've got one on University, I guess. It's not quite a detour, but it's a narrowing of the street. And when we encounter a detour, it usually indicates maybe there's road work ahead, or there's been an accident, or water's over the road. Something that alters our pre-planned route and affects our pre-planned timing. Often, usually, I would say I find detours to be inconvenient. They slow us down. Now, that's not always bad to be slowed down, but we feel it is at the time. But God has a goal, and he has a purpose for our existence. And he has a reason, I believe, for us being here. A godly reason for us being where we are and headed where we are headed. But God rarely takes us through life without some detours. Life is seldom, I'm going to say life is never, point A to point B to point C to point D. Lives are usually point A to point R to point K to point M to point V to point B. We may end up where we intended to end up, but we didn't get there the way we intended to get there. Part of understanding life is understanding that life, I think, is largely just a series of detours. And those detours aren't in and of themselves bad, but they do require us to adjust and make the appropriate adjustments. And the Bible is full of destinies that were reached through detours. Israel in the Exodus, a 40-year detour. It should have only taken them about 3 or 4 weeks to have traversed from Goshen to Canaan. They had quite a detour, didn't they? Abraham, he had a 25-year-long detour. God told Abraham his plan, but rather than it taking 9 months to execute that plan, it took some 20-plus years for that plan to actually be executed. Paul, after his conversion, spent time in Arabia. I don't know that Paul would have thought that was necessary. He was probably gung-ho after the Damascus Road to preach, but God gave him a bit of a detour, because you simply don't get anywhere meaningful in a straight line. With that, I'd like to go back to the latter part of the book of Genesis, to a story that's familiar to us, and pick up a few thoughts on the life of Joseph. Now, I think most, if not all of you, kind of know the story, the beginning, the middle, and the end. So I'm going to start at the end and kind of work my way back. In Genesis chapter 50, beginning with verse 19, for the next 3 or 4 verses, it reads, "And Joseph said unto them," this was his brothers, "Fear not, for I am in the place of God. But as for you, you thought evil against me," when they threw him in the pit, "but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save many people. Now therefore do not fear, I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. And Joseph dwelled in Egypt, he and his father's house, and Joseph lived 110 years. That's the end, somewhat, of that story. And it gives us God's destiny for the life of Joseph. His brothers meant that the throwing of him into the pit and the selling of him to, ultimately to Egypt, was for evil. But Joseph says, but God saw that it was good. Now I'm going to drop back to verse 37, because I find Joseph to be not only an inspirational character, but a very human character. I believe Joseph was the favorite son in a dysfunctional family. Sometimes we get almost an idealistic feeling about some of the characters in the Bible, and I don't mean to demean them, I don't mean to lessen their faith and the wonderful accomplishments they have, but I do want to emphasize their humanness, and they went through detours just like you and I, and they went through some of them of their own making, and I think that could be said of Joseph. It seems to me like when things happen to us, they probably happen for one of four reasons. Either Satan is having his way with us and has deceived us, or time and chance, and Ecclesiastes 9 and 11, for instance, says time and chance happens to us all. Sometimes things just happen. I personally think that's probably the most frequent. Sometimes things happen to us because of things we have done. So Paul says in Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, as a man sows, so shall he reap. There's a cause and effect that we have placed upon ourselves. But I also think there are times when God does things. In Hebrews chapter 12, it says, whom God loves, he chastens. So there's God's activity. I don't think that we can often know which one of those four it is, but they can all be distractions. I said Joseph was the favorite son, and we get that impression from the robe or coat of many colors of his father. But I also said that I think he was a member of a dysfunctional family, and I think he made a fair number of mistakes that led to some of the detours we find in the book of Genesis. Jacob, Joseph's father, was a deceiver. He was a trickster. You remember how he and his mother deceived his father and got the birthright that really was to be Esau's? And as Jacob was a deceiver, he gave birth to deceivers. You've heard that saying, the apples don't fall too far from the tree. My sons like to take issue with that and claim that they rolled quite a ways down the hill from me. And I wouldn't blame them for feeling that way. But Reuben, the oldest son of Jacob, had sex with his father's concubine in chapter 35, verse 22. Simeon and Levi were mass murderers, sons of Jacob. Chapter 34, verse 24 and following. Judah, another one of Jacob's sons, had sex with his daughter-in-law. We're talking about a rather obviously dysfunctional, somewhat immoral family, not somewhat, an immoral family. They were one messed up family. And a lot of that stemmed from the father coming into fatherhood as a messed up man. Well, Joseph was born into that environment. That's my point. And he was his father's favorite. But I'd just like for us to think about maybe some of the ways in which I think Joseph poorly handled some situations. Now, some of these he was still a teenager and young, and we can say, well, that's just what the teenagers do. Well, sometimes that's true. Put yourself in the place of Joseph's brothers. And now Joseph gets this coat of many colors. We really probably don't really appreciate what that meant. That was a coat of royalty. Kings, royalty, had coats like that. Now, if you have brothers and sisters, just think, okay, your parents buy all of your brothers and sisters nice shirts, nice slacks, good cowboy boot, whatever you think is really neat. That's what your brothers and sisters got. And you get a pair of grubby bib overalls. Now that's about the way I think these boys felt. Well, that wasn't Joseph's fault, per se. But it did gender up, wasn't the only cause, and it doesn't justify it. It did gender up some sibling rivalry and sibling hatred. But what does Joseph do? He puts his coat of many colors on and he goes prancing off to his brothers. Now, I don't want to read too much into Scripture, but that's kind of a rub it in your face. It's kind of rubbing it in your face. And we find him doing that in chapter 37, verses 5 and 9. In Genesis chapter 37, verse 2, it says, "These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding a flock with his brethren, and a lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah and his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report." You know what that is? Joseph was a tattletale. Who likes a tattletale? The only person that likes a tattletale is the tattletaler. And we've all been tattled on, and we've all tattled. Joseph was awfully human. You think that made his brothers feel good about him? No. Drop down to verse 5. "And Joseph dreamed a dream and told it to his brothers, and they hated him even the more. Remember the dream that said Joseph would be predominant in this family? Now you go tell all your family siblings that I had a dream and I'm going to be over you. That might be true. It was in Joseph's case, but it's not a way to gender up love and family harmony. The sporting of his robe, the tattletaling, the rubbing, shall I say, maybe the rubbing of these dreams in their faces, all led to this moment of being thrown into the pit. I think Joseph had a lot of immaturity. Now, he was young, so maybe that's the reason why. But it all led to this huge detour in his life that we're all, I think, familiar with. Detours which develop the character within us that are often needed in order to do God's full desire within us. It's as we go through the crucibles of life, things may and often get worse before they get better. Now, when we look at our world and our roads, usually detours means there is some construction taking place, or at least we hope it means that. And I think in our lives, when detours come into our lives, it's hopefully a moment or a period of time where construction comes into our lives. As I thought about stories in the Old Testament, how many of those stories are about things people didn't expect to happen in their lives that lessons were learned from? Job, Ruth, Moses, David, you just almost can't mention any significant character in the Old Testament that didn't become, to the extent they became, a servant of God that wasn't attached to some kind of detour. Joseph's life, was a series of twists and turns to get him to where God wanted him to be. In James chapter 1, verses 2 and following, it talks about how tests or trials, we should be happy about those, not because of the pain per se, but their ability to enhance our faith. Some of you have gone through, all of us have gone through detours, but some of you have gone through some very major detours in your lives, and some of us will go through some very major detours in our lives. And as Christians, there are wonderful opportunities not to be joyous about, but there are wonderful opportunities to grow and to build our faith. Now, the Jewish culture believed strongly that if something bad happened to someone, it was because they were being punished for something they had done. Job's friends, when they came and visited him, largely argued, "Job, you had to have done something for all of this to have happened." And Job said, "No, I didn't do anything." Well, Job turned out to be right. But that was the Jewish culture. In John chapter 9, when Jesus heals the blind man, the Jews early in that chapter say he or his parents must have done something that caused him to be blind. In other words, they equated blindness with some kind of sin. Well, I think we understand that some sins can lead to physical trepidation, but in general, ill health is not, certainly not always, maybe not even usually, the result of sin. Time and chance does happen to us all. But these things are all throughout the Bible, and I think these things are all throughout our lives today. The issue is not, will we have detours in our lives? I think the issue is, will we adjust to them in a Christian way? And will we be able to grow from them? It was Malcolm Mundridge who said, "The only thing that teaches one anything is suffering and affliction. Not success, not happiness, not anything like that. The only thing that truly teaches us what life is about is suffering and affliction." I'm not sure I fully agree with Mundridge on that, but I do agree that oftentimes that is one of the most powerful teachers that we do have. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, when he was leaving prison, the Russian dissident, looked back at the prison and is quoted as saying, "Bless you, prison, for being in my life." Now, he wasn't saying, "I'm glad I spent 10 to 15 years in prison," but he was saying, "I learned things there during that time that I wouldn't have learned any other way." Detours in our lives can force us to make decisions that are crucial to our lives, cause us to study, cause us to consider what we maybe not would not have otherwise considered. I think it was that way with Joseph. I would love to have been inside his head or know what was inside his head when he found himself in Egypt. I think his meditation, his thoughts were totally different than they were for the first 17 years of his life. When he could kind of frolic through it, he was the favorite son, he had everything you could want, rich father, and all of a sudden that's all taken away from him, and the reflections he must have had that led him to be the man that he was. You know, as parents and maybe even as grandparents, but certainly as parents, we all have that desire for our children to have it better than we had it. And I don't know that I'm going to say that's wrong, but I think that is sometimes short-sighted, because if our children don't go through some of the things that we went through, they're not going to learn some of the lessons that we found were very important to learn. I've talked to more than one father who got a call in the night that his son was in jail for, not for murder, but for a traffic violation or just being sloppy, and I know more than one Christian father just left him in there for a while. Now, I'm not saying you should do that, but I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, or whatever the issue is. Sometimes we want to protect our family so much, our children so much, that we take away from them the wonderful, although sometimes painful, learning experiences that come with it. Paul alludes to this, I think, in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, beginning with verse 7, where he's talking about some of the difficult things that happened in his life, but then he integrates that with the idea of, you know, it was really good that these things happen, or that I have some of these difficulties. And I'm going to read 2 Corinthians chapter 12, for just a few verses, beginning with verse 7. "Lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given unto me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure." Now, Paul had prayed multiple times for this thorn to be removed, whatever the thorn in the flesh was. We can debate it. It's been debated. I don't know. You don't know. But it was some significant physical difficulty or distress. I don't know if he was born with it. I tend to think maybe it occurred later in his life, but I don't know that. But he says here, it helped me control my pride. Something you don't want, a difficulty, but Paul says it helped me. "For this thing I besought the Lord three times." I prayed to God that he'd take it away from me three times. "And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." You're familiar with those passages. I don't read them because you're not familiar with them. It's just an example of Paul talking about some of the detours. This was a physical detour, but he could have talked about the whippings, he could have talked about the beatings, he could have talked about the shipwreck. That instilled, number one, humility in him through some pain or difficulty, the thorn in the flesh. But God provided a provision for him when he says, "My grace is sufficient for you." A perspective that Paul, a perspective that Joseph, a perspective that Job, a perspective that David, and on, and hopefully now a perspective that you and I can have as we go through life. Next week at Pleasant Hill, our theme was going to be coping, so I'm going to be going through several things that we have to cope with. I'm not going to give that lesson now. But in preparing for that, I ran across an interesting thought, and I'll have it next week too. It said, we should all have a plan A and then realize that 99% of the time life is plan B. And life is how you adjust to plan B because plan A didn't work. And it's not that we shouldn't have a plan for our life, it's just that we have to cope with all those little detours. Maybe you have a child not on exactly your timetable. Maybe you have an illness. Certainly that wouldn't be on your timetable. Debbie didn't expect to have a heart attack a week and a half ago or a week ago. And I can just keep, Marla didn't think, well, boy, it's time for me to fall down and break my arm. She didn't plan that. Now she has to adjust. Well, that's a physical adjustment that isn't nearly as serious as a spiritual adjustment, but it required. I watched her at noon eat with her left hand. She did pretty good. Not as good as I did with my right hand, but she did pretty good. But we make adjustments. We lose loved ones. We have to make adjustments, don't we? Or we cannot make adjustments and just plow through the detour as if it wasn't there and ignore the signs. And that is obviously not a good thing. In Hebrews chapter 12, beginning with verse 5, and I alluded to this a little bit when I quoted the concept that God, whom God loves, he chastens. There is the concept of sometimes the chastening of God, and I don't believe every bad thing that happens to us is God chastening us. I don't even personally guess that most of the bad things that happen to us are God chastening us, but some of them are. But there's that pain of that chastening, of that detour. Maybe you were expected to do something financially and the stock market didn't cooperate. That's a detour. It's not a detour in your car, but it's a detour in your life. I know several couples that plan to retire and do a lot of travel, and one of their health or lives ceased and they weren't able to do that. When I moved to Kansas City, there was a couple there. He used to be an elder at Gregory Boulevard. His name was Vic Gibson, hard-working, kind of a bear of a man. He retired in June and died in July. They had bought a camper and were going to do all this, he and Cleo. Unexpected. She went on to serve the Lord in many, many wonderful ways. Because she was able to adjust to the detour. Now, some people, when they hit a detour, they lose their faith. Why did God cause this to happen? Or at least, why did God allow it to happen? We need to remember that God never put death and illness in the plan. Adam and Eve put it in the plan, or their sin brought it into the plan, not God. Sometimes these detours are moments of divine appointment. Whether it's a thorn in the flesh, whether it's the loss of material things or family like Job had. But there are often times when I think God is wanting to get us or get our attention. We need to always remember, if we're having financial problems, God is still the answer. If we have friends that have turned their back on us, God is still the answer. If we've lost some of our family, either physically or spiritually, God is still the answer. If we have a habit or a temptation that we repeatedly go back into, even though we think we want to kick it, we need to remember that God is the answer. We get so caught up in self that it often takes a rather dramatic detour to get our minds back on God. I mentioned in one of my previous talks this week, I can't remember which one it was, that sometimes I drive without any thought. and that caused me one Sunday morning to drive to school when I should have been driving to church. Because I just drove and I didn't think about it. You know what a detour makes me do? It makes me think. I was going to a funeral in Milan, Missouri. If any of you have been to Milan, I'm looking to see if there's anybody close to Milan. If you've been to Milan, you have my sympathy. I'll just put it that way. But I knew how to get there. Miles has been to Milan. Okay, I knew there'd be somebody here. He's back there smiling. You could talk to him later, but that's okay. I had a funeral. Well, you know, funerals start at a certain time. I was just buzzing along, had plenty of time. And there was a bridge out, so it says detour. Well, I didn't know what to do, because the detour was a gravel road, and I don't know my gravel roads up there. So there was this other guy coming along there, and he turned off there, and he looked like he was a local. So I said, I'll follow him. He's going to Milan. I got it made. So I followed him for probably 10 minutes. And the guy turned into his driveway. And I thought, this isn't working. So I just followed him in his driveway, because I was lost. And he was nice and told the city slicker how to get to Milan. But that wasn't a pleasant time, because I had visions of a funeral and a casket and no me. Now, I mean, they could have buried him without me, but that was not the plan. It was disruptive, but I really focused on the road. I didn't do thoughtless driving. I did intense driving. We'll just leave it at that. Detours can cause us to regain our focus when otherwise we just go through life. That's my point. We go through life without giving it a whole lot of thought. Joseph became the provider for not only his family, but for God's people. Paul, because of his detours, gained more power, more holiness, more fruitfulness. You know, there cannot be a fruitless Christian. That is a oxymoron. Now, some Christians produce more fruit than others, but all Christians have to produce fruit or they're not attached to the vine, John chapter 15. And sometimes detours, I think, can make us more fruitful, can place us in soil that we've never been before. Moments that will never mean, that would have never meant, I guess I should say, what they mean to us now. Moments when maybe you're really sick and you're not sure you're going to live. You cherish life that much more. The loss of a loved one causes you to cherish the rest of your family even more. I visited Don and Margaret today, and this is an aside, but I was just thrilled. I walked in, Margaret was asleep, and I woke her up, and she said, "Hi, John." I had no idea she'd recognize me. Now, after that, it got a little fuzzy, so I don't want to paint an unclear picture. But I was visiting with Don, and you guys know Don Warren. Sat right there for how many years? Would never miss unless he was sick. It is really painful for him not to be here. It really is. And he cherishes being here. Sometimes for you and I, unfortunately, it takes the loss of something before we really appreciate it. And it shouldn't. I guess that's normal. I guess it's natural. I just find it a little sad. I struggle with that. We just assume so many things. You know, my car is always going to start until it doesn't. And then my Christian whatever is tested. My Christian vocabulary is tested. My Christian attitude is tested. And on and on. So sometimes these things, these disruptions in our lives are really, I guess, somewhat blessings if we will use them appropriately and will think about them appropriately. I don't think Joseph for one moment after he was sold into Egypt and laid on the probably a dirt, cold dirt floor in some dungeon said, "Boy, God, thank you for sending me here." But by the time you get to chapter 50, he says, "God had a plan, and I got to play a little part in it." Now that was a maturing of insight that Joseph had. I don't think the moment Paul had the Damascus experience, he said, "Boy, this was fun." He couldn't see. He didn't know if he was ever going to see again. He had no idea if he was ever going to see again. And that's probably our most precious sense of our five senses for all of us. But he later learned to understand. To understand. That this is the day that the Lord hath made. We will be glad and rejoice in it. Whatever comes our way. We're all going to have disappointments. We all do have disappointments, and we all are disappointments, aren't we? If you want to know the person I get most disappointed in, I'd need a mirror, because it's me. Oh, I get disappointed in other people, but I'm the one that lets myself down probably more than anybody else. But something good can come out of what, however tragic the detour is. As I close, I'd like to read for you an account that occurred at Texas A&M University. Texas A&M, if you're not familiar, I'm sure most of you have heard of it, but it's kind of a pseudo-military academy. They're cadets there. Not quite like Annapolis, but not too far from it. A young man by the name of Bruce Goodrich had just enrolled in Texas A&M as a cadet, was going to go through the college there. And as part of his initiation, he was forced to go on some kind of a run. I'm not sure exactly what it was. But to make a long story a little shorter, Bruce Goodrich never came back from that run. He dropped dead. You don't hear this too often, but every once in a while a 19-year-old athlete just collapses and dies. A short time after that happened, Bruce's father wrote a letter to the administration, the faculty, and the student body, and the Corps of Cadets at Texas A&M. And I'd just like to read to you one paragraph that Mr. Goodrich put in this letter. He said, and I quote, "I would like to take this opportunity to express the appreciation of my family for the great outpouring of concern and sympathy from Texas A&M University and the college community over the loss of our son, Bruce. We were deeply touched by the tribute paid to him in the battalion. We were particularly pleased to note that his witness did not go unnoticed during his brief time on campus." Mr. Goodrich went on and concluded by saying, "I hope it will be some comfort to know that we harbor no ill will in this matter. We know that God makes no mistakes. And when the question is asked, why did this happen? Perhaps one answer will be so that many will consider where they will spend eternity." End quote. Now, was he happy that his son had died? Of course not. No father, no parent would. But I have no idea what this man's religion or his beliefs were. He obviously had some Christian sense. But I was struck by his saying, out of this, maybe he will bring somebody to the Lord. He will bring somebody to the Lord. Every time I make that point, I think of someone that most of you knew here in the Des Moines area. Certainly those of you from Pleasant Hill knew. A man by the name of Larry George died 10, 12 years ago. I'm not sure about that. He was younger than I am now, early 60s, if I recall right. In a freakish, tragic work accident. We'll just leave it at that. And I remember as I preached Larry George's funeral, he had written a little paragraph letter to his family. And they said, would you read this? Well, that's kind of heavy plowing. But basically what it said, I didn't bring it with me, I do keep it, said, if you're hearing these words, I'm now gone, and there's not a thing you can do for me. I'm either going to heaven or I'm going to hell, and there's not a thing any of you can do to change that. So don't worry about that. But take care of yourselves physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Larry George's middle son lives in Lee Summit, Missouri, where I live. Mike, his middle son, had been raised in the church, but had left the church. There's no two ways about it. From the Sunday after Larry George's funeral until this very day, Mike George does not miss church. He does not miss Sunday morning. He does not miss Sunday night. He does not miss Wednesday night. And he usually goes to some midweek study in addition to Wednesday night. And his wife doesn't go. I raise that because the tragedy of Larry George's death for me was enormous. Larry was just beginning to mellow out and enjoy his grandchildren and his family the way that I think the Lord would want him to. But he did something in his death that he had not been able to do in his life. Now, am I glad? Is anybody glad that Larry George died the way he did? No. But Larry George would be very, very pleased at one very important outcome of that tragic event. It was a tremendous detour for the family. It was a tremendous detour for the church family. But sometimes detours accomplish things that we would never otherwise accomplish. I do not want any of you to die so that somebody will come to the Lord. That's not my point. We don't have control over that. My point is, these are times that can be tremendously influential in our lives and in other people's lives. And I'm just looking at faces. I could just go down almost every face or every other face I'm looking at and recall something that really important happened in your life because of something you didn't expect. I'm not going to do that because I don't want to embarrass anybody, and I don't want to be wrong. But I know most of your lives well enough to know that very, very thing. I know my life well enough to know that very, very thing. So maybe our prayer should be, Lord, don't bless me more than I can handle, and give me enough detours so I'll grow up. So that I'll grow up. I think our biggest temptation, our biggest stumbling block, is how blessed we are. I don't want to give them back. I don't want you to give yours back. I just want us to understand what a burden it is to live for the Lord when we're as blessed as we are. We close our thoughts tonight. We extend the gospel invitation. Let us not give back our many blessings that the Lord has so graciously given us, but let us use them. Use them. I will tell you that one of the topics I hope to cover next week is the topic I've only covered once in my life, and that's the blessing of retirement. We have not figured out how to use retirement well. In my humble opinion. But after I'm done next week, you can have equal time to speak. But that's a tremendous blessing. It's a new blessing. If I go to the Apostle Paul and say, how do I handle my retirement? He'd look at me like a deer in headlights because he didn't know what retirement was. It was something new. I think it's wonderful. I just think it's a tremendous blessing that deserves a little thought on how we're going to cope with it. And if we don't cope with it or any other blessing right, it's simply a detour that hasn't gotten us where we want to get. But we're going to close our thoughts. I said that once, didn't I? We'll close our thoughts tonight. Things happen. I tend to think usually it's time and chance as opposed to an intervention, but it's not always. Sometimes it is intervention, but it really doesn't matter. Let's use them. Let's use them to become more faithful and more impacted with the Word and better servants. If we can help anybody in any way tonight, we invite you to come as we stand and David leads us in our final song.